Lying on the dresser was a single car key. It was a spare, but it had a Jeep tag. Patch had given Marcy a spare to his Jeep. Swiping the key off the dresser, I shoved it deep into my other back pocket. While I was at it, I figured I might as well look for anything else belonging to him. I opened and closed a few dresser drawers. I looked under the bed, in the hope chest, and on the top shelf of Marcy's closet. Finally, I slipped my hand between the mattress and box spring. I pulled out the diary. Marcy's small blue diary, rumored to contain more scandal than a tabloid. Holding it between my hands, I felt the overwhelming temptation to open it. What had she written about Patch? What secret things were hiding in the pages? My walkie-talkie crackled. "Oh, crap," V said through it. I fumbled it out of my waistband and pushed the talk button. "What's the matter?" "Dog. Big dog. It just lumbered into the living room, or whatever you call this humongous open space. It's staring at me, like, staring right at me."
"What kind of dog?"
"I'm not up to date on my dog species, but I think it's a Doberman Pinscher. Pointed, snarling face. It resembles Marcy a little too much, if that helps." Uh-oh. Its ears just went up. "It's coming toward me. I think it's one of those psychic dogs. It knows I'm not just sitting here minding my own business."
"Stay calm."
"Shoo, dog! I said shoo!" The unmistakable growl of a big dog came through the walkie-talkie.
Nora? We have a problem," V said a moment later.
"The dog didn't leave?"
"Worse. It just bounded upstairs."
Just then there was a snapping bark at the door. The barking didn't stop. It grew louder and more snarling.
"V," I hissed into the walkie-talkie, "get rid of the dog!"
She said something in response, but I couldn't hear over the dog's growls. I flattened my hand to my ear.
"What? Marcy's coming! Get out of there!"
I started to shove the diary back under the mattress, but fumbled it. Handfuls of notes and pictures spilled from the pages. In a panic, I raked the notes and pictures into a pile and tossed them back inside the diary. Then I rammed the diary, which was quite small considering how many secrets it was rumored to hold, and my walkie-talkie into the waistband of my pants and flipped the light switch off. I'd deal with putting the diary back later. Right now, I had to get out. I raised the window, expecting to have to remove the screen, but it was already done for me. Probably Marcy had removed it long ago to avoid the nuisance when she was sneaking out. That thought gave me a small measure of hope. If Marcy had climbed out before, I could too. It wasn't like I was going to fall and kill myself. Of course, Marcy was a cheerleader and a lot more flexible and coordinated. Poking my head out the open window, I looked down. The front door was directly below, under a portico supported by four pillars. Swinging one leg out, I found traction on the shingles. After I was sure I wasn't going to slide off the sloped portico, I brought my other leg out. Balancing my weight, I lowered the window back into place. I'd just ducked below the window line when the glass filled with light. The dog's nails clicked against the glass, and it uttered a round of furious barks. Dropping to my stomach, I squeezed as close to the house as I could and prayed Marcy didn't open the window and look down.
"What is it?" Marcy's muffled voice carried through the window pane. "What's the matter, Boomer?"
A trickle of sweat fell down my spine. Marcy was going to look down, and she was going to see me. I shut my eyes and tried to forget that her house was filled with people I had to attend school with for the next 2 years. How was I going to explain snooping in Marcy's bedroom? How was I going to explain holding her diary? The thought was too humiliating to bear.
"Shut up, Boomer!" Marcy shouted. "Would somebody hold my dog while I open the window? If you don't hold him, he's stupid enough to jump out. You, in the hall? Yes, you! Grab my dog's collar and don't let go. Just do it!"
Hoping the dog's barking would mask any sounds I made, I rolled over and planted my back against the shingles. I swallowed the knot of fright in my throat. I had kind of a phobia about heights, and the thought of all that air between me and the ground had sweat leaking from my skin. Digging my heels into the roof to push my weight as far away from the ledge as possible, I wrestled the walkie-talkie out of my pants.
"V," I whispered. "Where are you?" she said through the music blaring in the background. "Think you could get rid of the dog any day now?"
"How?"
"Be creative."
"Like feed it poison?" I wiped sweat off my forehead with the back of my hand. "I was thinking more like lock it in a closet."
"You mean touch it? V?"
Okay, I'll think of something." 30 seconds ticked by before I heard V's voice float through Marcy's bedroom window.
Hey, Marcy, she called over the barking. Not to interfere, but the police are at the front door. They said they're responding to a noise complaint. Do you want me to invite them in? What? Marcy shrilled directly above me. I don't see any police cars. They probably had to park a couple blocks over. Anyway, as I was saying, I noticed illegal substances in the hands of a few guests. So? She snapped. It's a party. Alcohol is illegal under the age of 21. Great! Marcy shouted. What am I going to do? She paused, then raised her voice again. You probably called them.
Who, me? V said. And lose the free food? No way.
A moment later, Boomer's frantic barking faded into the house, and the bedroom light blinked out. I held perfectly still a moment longer, listening. When I was positive Marcy's bedroom was empty, I flipped to my stomach and belly crawled up to the window. The dog was gone, Marcy was gone, and if I could just... I pressed my palms to the window to force it up, but it didn't budge. Leveraging my hands lower on the pane, I put all my strength into it. Nothing happened. Okay, I thought. No big deal. Marcy must have locked the window. All I had to do was hang out here another 5 hours until the party ended, then get V to come back with a ladder. I heard footsteps on the walk below and craned my neck to see if by some stroke of luck V had come to my rescue. To my horror, Patch had his back to me, walking toward the Jeep. He punched a number into his cell and raised it to his ear. 2 seconds later, my cell phone sang out in my pocket. Before I could hurl the cell into the bushes at the edge of the property, Patch came to a stop. He looked over his shoulder, his eyes traveling up. His gaze fell on me, and I thought it would have been better if Boomer had shredded me alive.
And here I thought they were called Peeping Toms.
I didn't need to see him to know he wore a smile. Stop laughing, I said, my cheeks hot with humiliation. Get me down.
Jump.
What?
I'll catch you.
Are you crazy? Go inside and open the window, or get a ladder.
I don't need a ladder. Jump. I'm not going to drop you.
Oh, sure, like I believe that.
You want my help or not?
You call this help? I hissed furiously. This isn't help!
He spun his keychain around his finger, then started to walk away. You are such a jerk! Get back here! Jerk, he repeated. You're the one spying in windows.
I wasn't spying, I was... Think of something.
Patch's eyes flicked to the window above me, and I watched as understanding dawned on his face. He tilted his head back and gave a bark of laughter. You were searching Marcy's bedroom.
No.
I rolled my eyes like it was the most absurd suggestion. What were you looking for?
Nothing. I yanked Patch's ball cap out of my back pocket and flung it at him. And here's your stupid hat back, by the way.
You went in for my hat?
A big waste, obviously.
He fit the hat to his head. Are you going to jump?
I took an uneasy look over the edge of the portico, and the ground seemed to drop another 20 feet out of reach. Sidestepping an answer, I asked, Why did you call?
I lost sight of you inside. I wanted to make sure you were okay.
He sounded sincere, but he was a smooth liar. And the cherry coke?
Peace offering. You going to jump or what?
Seeing no alternative, I scooted cautiously to the edge of the portico. My stomach flipped circles. If you drop me, I warned. Patch had his arms raised. Squeezing my eyes shut, I slid off the ledge. I felt air break around my body, and then I was in Patch's arms, anchored against him. I stayed there a moment, heart hammering from both the adrenaline of falling and from standing so close to Patch. He felt warm and familiar. He felt solid and safe. I wanted to cling to his shirt, bury my face into the warm curve of his neck, and never let go. Patch tucked a stray curl behind my ear.
Do you want to go back to the party?
He murmured. I shook my head no.
I'll drive you home.
He used his chin to gesture at the Jeep because he still hadn't unfolded his arms from around me. I came with V, I said. I should catch a ride with her.
V's not going to pick up Chinese takeout on the way home.
Chinese takeout. That would involve Patch coming inside the farmhouse to eat. My mom wasn't home, which meant we would be all alone. I let my guard slide a little further. Probably we were safe.
Probably the archangels were nowhere close. Patch didn't seem worried, so neither should I. And it was just dinner. I'd had a long, unsatisfying day at school, and I was famished from an hour at the gym. Takeout with Patch sounded perfect. How was a casual dinner together going to hurt? People ate dinner together all the time and never carried it further. Just dinner, I said, more to convince myself than Patch. He gave the Boy Scout salute, but his smile was up to no good. A bad boy's smile. The wicked, charming smile of a guy who'd kissed Marcy a mere 2 nights ago and was offering to have dinner with me tonight, most likely with the hope that dinner would lead to something else entirely. He thought one heart-melting smile was all it would take to erase my hurt, to make me forget he'd kissed Marcy. All my inner turmoil scattered as I was jerked to the present. My speculations died, replaced by a sudden, strong feeling of unease that had nothing to do with Patch or Sunday night. Goosebumps prickled my skin. I studied the shadows ringing the lawn. Patch murmured, detecting my concern, tightening his arms protectively around me. And then I felt it again. A change in the air. An invisible fog, strangely warm, hanging low, pressing all around, zigzagging closer like 100 stealthy snakes in the air. The sensation was so disruptive I had a hard time believing Patch hadn't at least noticed something was off, even if he couldn't feel it directly. "What is it, Angel?" His voice was low, questioning. "Are we safe? Does it matter?" I shifted my eyes around the yard. I wasn't sure why, but I kept thinking, "The Archangels, they're here." "I mean, the Archangels," I said so quietly I barely heard my own voice. "Aren't they watching?"
"Yes."
I tried to step back, but Patch refused to let me.
"I don't care what they see. I'm tired of the charade."
He'd stopped nuzzling my neck, and I saw a certain tormented defiance in his eyes. I struggled harder to pull away. "Let go."
"You don't want me?"
His smile was all fox. "That's not the issue. I don't want to be responsible for anything happening to you. Let go." How could he be so casual about this? They were hunting for an excuse to get rid of him. He couldn't be seen holding me. He caressed the sides of my arms, but as I tried to take the opportunity to break away, he caught my hands. His voice broke into my mind.
"I could go rogue. I could walk away right now and we could stop playing by the Archangel's rules."
He said it so decidedly, so easily, I knew this wasn't the first time he'd thought it. This was a plan he'd secretly fantasized about many, many times. My heart was beating wildly. Walk away? Stop playing by the rules? What are you talking about?
I'd live on the move, constantly hiding, hoping the Archangels don't find me.
If they did,
I'd go to trial. I'd be found guilty, but it would give us a few weeks alone while they deliberated.
I could feel the stricken look on my face. And then?
They'd send me to hell.
He paused, then added with quiet conviction.
I'm not afraid of hell. I deserve what's coming. I've lied, cheated, deceived. I've hurt innocent people. I've made more mistakes than I can remember. One way or another, I've been paying for them most of my existence. Hell won't be any different.
His mouth quirked into a brief, wry smile.
But I'm sure the Archangels have a few cards up their sleeves.
His smile faded, and he looked at me with stripped honesty.
Being with you never felt wrong. It's the one thing I did right. You're the one thing I did right. I don't care about the Archangels. Tell me what you want me to do. Say the word. I'll do whatever you want. We can leave right now.
It took a moment for his words to settle in. I looked to the Jeep. The wall of ice between us fell away. The wall was only there because of the Archangels. Without them, everything Patch and I had been fighting over meant nothing. They were the problem. I wanted to leave them and everything else behind and race off with Patch. I wanted to be reckless, thinking only of right here, right now. We could make each other forget about consequences. We'd laugh at rules, boundaries, and most of all, tomorrow. There would only be me and Patch, and nothing else would matter. Nothing but the promise of what would happen when those weeks drew to a close. I had two choices, but the answer was clear. The only way I could keep Patch was by letting him go, by having nothing to do with him.
I didn't realize I was crying until Patch ran his thumbs under my eyes.
"Shh," he murmured. "It's going to be okay. I want you. I can't keep doing what I'm doing now, living halfway."
"But they'll send you to hell," I stammered, unable to control the quiver in my lower lip.
"I've had a long time to come to terms with it."
I was determined not to show Patch how hard this was for me, but I choked on the tears running down my throat. My eyes were damp and swollen, and my chest ached. This was all my fault. If it weren't for me, he wouldn't be a guardian angel. If it weren't for me, the archangels wouldn't be bent on destroying him. I was responsible for driving him to this point.
"I need one favor," I finally said in a small voice that sounded more like a stranger's than my own.
"Tell V I walked home. I need to be alone."
"Angel?"
Patch reached for my hand, but I pulled free. I felt my feet walking away one step in front of the other. Farther and farther from Patch they took me, as if my mind had gone numb and turned all action over to my body. Chapter 13. The following afternoon, V dropped me off near the front door to Enzo's. I was dressed in a yellow printed sundress that walked the line between flirty and professional, and was far more optimistic than anything I felt on the inside. I stopped in front of the windows to shake out my hair, which had relaxed into waves after being slept on all night, but the gesture felt wooden. I forced a smile. It was the one I'd been practicing all morning. It felt tight at the edges and brittle everywhere in between. In the window it looked false and hollow, but for a morning following a night spent crying, it was the best I could manage. After walking home from Marcy's last night, I'd curled into bed, but I hadn't slept. I'd spent the night tormented by self-destructive thoughts. The longer I stayed awake, the more my thoughts took a dizzying departure from reality. I wanted to make a statement, and I was hurting enough not to care how drastic it was. A thought came to me, the kind of thought I never would have entertained in my life before. If I ended my life, the archangels would see it. I wanted them to feel remorse. I wanted them to doubt their archaic laws. I wanted them to be held accountable for ripping my life apart, then ripping it away completely. My mind swirled and tottered with these kinds of thoughts all night. My emotions shifted through heartbreaking loss, denial, anger. At one point, I regretted not running away with Patch. Any happiness, no matter how brief, seemed better than the long, simmering torture of waking up day after day, knowing I could never have him. But as the sun began to crack across the sky this morning, I came to a decision. I had to move on. It was either that or slip into a frozen depression. I forced myself through the motions of showering and dressing, and went to school with fixed determination that no one would see below skin deep. A pins and needles sensation enveloped my body, but I refused to display a single outward sign of self-pity. I wasn't going to let the archangels win. I was going to pull myself back on my feet, get a job, pay off my speeding ticket, finish summer school with the top grade, and keep myself so occupied that only at night when I was alone with my thoughts and it couldn't be helped would I think of Patch. Inside Enzo's, two semicircular balconies spread out to my left and right, with a set of wide stairs leading down into the main eating area and front counter. The balconies reminded me of curved catwalks overlooking a pit. The tables on the balcony were filled, but only a few stragglers drinking coffee and reading the morning paper remained in the pit. With the help of a deep breath, I took the stairs down and approached the front counter. "Excuse me, I heard you're hiring baristas," I told the woman at the register. My voice sounded flat in my ears, but I didn't have the energy to try to correct it. The woman, a middle-aged redhead with a name tag that read Roberta, looked up. "I'd like to fill out an application." I managed a half-smile, but somehow I feared it wasn't anywhere close to believable. Roberta wiped her freckled hands on a rag and came around the counter. "Baristas! Not anymore!" I stared at her, holding my breath, feeling all hope deflate inside me. My plan was everything. I hadn't considered what I would do if even one step of it was yanked out from under me. I needed a plan. I needed this job. I needed a carefully controlled life where every minute was planned and every emotion compartmentalized. "But I'm still looking for a reliable counter attendant. Night shift only, 6 to 10, Roberta added. I blinked, my lip quivering slightly in surprise.
Oh, I said. That's good. At night we dim the lights, bring out the baristas, play a little jazz, and try for a more sophisticated feel. It used to be dead in here after 5, but we're hoping to lure crowds. Tough economy, she explained. You'd be in charge of greeting customers and writing down orders, then calling them into the kitchen. When the food's ready, you'd carry it out to the tables.
I tried to nod eagerly, determined to show her how much I wanted this job, feeling all the tiny cracks in my lips split as I smiled.
That sounds perfect, I managed in a husky voice.
Do you have any work experience?
I didn't, but V and I came to Enzo's at least 3 times a week. I know the menu by heart, I said, beginning to feel more solid, more real. A job. Everything depended on it. I was going to build a new life.
That's what I like to hear, Roberta said. When can you start?
Tonight? I could hardly believe she was offering me the job. Here I was, unable to summon up even a sincere smile, but she was overlooking it. She was giving me a chance. I put my hand forward to shake hers, then noticed a half-beat too late that it was trembling. She ignored my outstretched hand, eyeing me with her head cocked to one side in a way that only made me feel more exposed and self-conscious.
Is everything okay?
I sucked in a silent breath and held it. Yes, I'm fine. She gave a brisk nod.
Get here at 5:45 and I'll issue you a uniform before your shift.
Thank you so much, I began, my voice still in shock, but she was already scooting back behind the counter. As I stepped outside to a blinding sun, I ran calculations in my head. Assuming I was going to make minimum wage, if I worked every night for the next 2 weeks, I just might be able to pay off my speeding ticket. And if I worked every night for 2 months, that was 60 nights that I'd be too drowned in work to dwell on Patch. 60 nights closer to the end of summer vacation, when I could once again throw all my energy into school. I'd already decided to pack my schedule with demanding classes. I could handle homework in every shape and form. But heartbreak was entirely different.
Well, V asked, coasting up beside me in the neon, how'd it go?
I climbed into the passenger seat.
I got the job.
Nice. You seemed really nervous going in, almost like you were going to lose it. But no reason to worry now. You're officially a hard-working member of society. Proud of you, babe. When do you start?
I checked the readout on the dash. 4 hours.
I'll stop by tonight and request to be seated in your area.
Better leave a tip, I said,
my attempt at humor nearly bringing me to tears.
I'm your chauffeur. That's better than a tip.
6.5 hours later, Enzo's was jammed to the walls. My work uniform consisted of a white pin-tuck shirt, gray tweed slacks with a matching vest, and a newsboy cap. The newsboy cap wasn't doing a very good job of holding up my hair, which refused to stay tucked out of sight. At this moment, I could feel stray curls plastered to the sides of my face with sweat. Despite the fact that I was completely overwhelmed, it felt strangely relieving to be in over my head. There was no time to shift my thoughts, even fleetingly, to Patch.
New girl!
One of the cooks, Fernando, was shouting at me. He stood behind a short wall that separated the ovens from the rest of the kitchen, flapping a spatula.
Your order is up!
I grabbed the 3 sandwich plates, carefully stacked them up my arm in a row, and backed out of the swinging doors. On my way across the pit, I caught the eye of one of the hostesses. She jerked her chin at a newly seated table up on the balcony. I answered with a quick nod. Be there in a minute. 1 prime rib sandwich, 1 salami, and 1 roasted turkey, I said, setting the plates down in front of a party of 3 businessmen in suits. Enjoy your meal. I jogged up the steps leading out of the pit, pulling my meal order pad out of my back pocket. Halfway down the catwalk, my stride caught. Marcy Miller was directly ahead, seated at my newest table. I also recognized Addison Hales, Oakley Williams, and Ethan Tyler, all from school. I thought about making an about-face and telling the hostess to give someone else, anyone else, my table, when Marcy glanced up and I knew I was trapped. A granite-hard smile touched her mouth. My breathing faltered. Was there any possible way she could know I'd taken her diary? It wasn't until I'd walked home and crawled into bed last night that I remembered I still had it. I would have returned it right then, but it had been the last thing on my mind. The diary had seemed insignificant next to the raw turmoil scraping me both inside and out. As of this moment, it was sitting untouched on my bedroom floor, right beside last night's discarded clothes.
Isn't your outfit the cutest thing ever? Marcy said over the pre-recorded jazz. Ethan, didn't you wear a vest just like that to prom last year? I think Nora raided your closet.
While they laughed, I held my pen poised on the order pad. Can I get you something to drink? The special tonight is our coconut lime smoothie. Could everyone hear the scratch of guilt in my voice? I swallowed, hoping that when I spoke again, the jittery quality would be gone.
Last time I was in here, it was my mom's birthday, Marcy said. Our waitress sang happy birthday to her.
It took me a whole 3 seconds to catch on.
Oh, no. I mean, no, I'm not a waitress. I'm a counter attendant.
I don't care what you are. I want you to sing happy birthday to me. I stood paralyzed, my mind frantically groping for an escape. I couldn't believe Marcy was asking me to humiliate myself this way. Wait, of course she was asking me to humiliate myself. For the past 11 years, I'd kept a secret scorecard between us, but now I was certain she was keeping her own scorecard. She lived for the chance to one-up me. Worse, she knew her score doubled mine and she was still running up the points, which made her not only a bully, but a bad sport. I held out my hand. Let me see your ID.
Marcy lifted an uncaring shoulder. I forgot it.
We both knew she hadn't forgotten her driver's license, and we both knew it wasn't her birthday.
We're really busy tonight, I said, feigning apology. My manager wouldn't want me to take time away from the other customers.
Your manager would want you to keep your customers happy. Now sing.
And while you're at it, Ethan chimed in, bring out one of those free chocolate cakes.
We're only supposed to give out one slice, not a whole cake, I said.
We're only supposed to give out one slice, Addison mimicked, and the table erupted with laughter.
Marcy reached into her handbag and pulled out a flip camera. The red power button blinked on and she aimed the lens at me.
I can't wait to spam this video to the entire school. Good thing I have access to everyone's email. Who would have thought being an office aide would be so useful?
She knew about the diary. She had to, and this was payback. 50 points to me for stealing her diary. Twice that many to her for sending a video of me singing Happy Birthday Marcy to all of Coldwater High. I pointed over my shoulder at the kitchen and slowly backed up.
Listen, my orders are piling up.
Ethan, go tell that lovely hostess over there that we demand to speak to the manager.
Tell her our counter-attendant is being cranky, Marcy said.
I couldn't believe it. Less than 3 hours on the job and Marcy was going to get me fired. How was I going to pay off my ticket? And goodbye, Volkswagen Cabriolet. Most importantly, I needed the job to distract myself from the useless struggle of finding a way to deal with the blistering truth. Patch was out of my life. For good.
Time's up, Marcy said. Ethan, ask for the manager.
Wait, I said. I'll do it.
Marcy squealed and clapped her hands. Good thing I charged my battery.
Subconsciously, I tugged the newsboy cap lower, shielding my face. I opened my mouth.
Louder, they all shouted.
I sang louder, too embarrassed to tell if my tone was perilously flat. Nobody said a word. Marcy stowed the flip back inside her handbag.
Well, that was boring.
That sounded normal, Ethan said. Some of the blood drained from my face. I gave a brief, flustered, triumphant smile. 500 points. My solo was worth at least that. So much for Marcy blowing me to smithereens. I had officially taken the lead.
Drinks, anyone?
I asked, sounding surprisingly cheerful.
After scribbling down their orders, I turned to head back to the kitchen when Marcy called out, Oh, and Nora?
I stopped in my tracks. I sucked in a sharp breath, wondering what hoops she thought she could make me jump through next. Oh no. Unless she was going to out me. Right now, in front of all these people, she was going to tell the world I stole her diary so they could see just how low and despicable I really was.
Could you rush our order? Marcy finished. We have a party to get to.
Rush your order? I repeated stupidly. Did this mean she didn't know about the diary?
Patch is meeting us at Delphic Beach, and I don't want to be late.
Marcy instantly covered her mouth.
I'm so sorry. I wasn't even thinking. I shouldn't have mentioned Patch. It's got to be hard seeing him with someone else.
Any smile I was clinging to slipped. I felt heat creep up my neck. My heart beat so fast it made my head light. The room slanted inward, and Marcy's cutthroat smile was at the center of everything, laughing at me. So everything was back to normal then. Patch had gone back to Marcy. After I'd walked away last night, he'd resigned himself to the deal fate had handed us. If he couldn't have me, he'd settle for Marcy. How come they were allowed to have a relationship? Where were the Archangels when it came to keeping tabs on Patch and Marcy? What about their kiss? Were the Archangels going to let it slide because they knew it meant nothing to either of them? I wanted to scream at the unfairness of it all. Marcy could be with Patch when she didn't love him, but I couldn't, because I did, and the Archangels knew it. Why was it so wrong for us to be in love? Were angels and humans really that different? It's fine. I've moved on, I said, injecting a note of cool civility into my tone. Good for you, Marcy said, nibbling seductively on her straw, not one part of her looking like she believed me. Back in the kitchen, I sent Marcy's table's order into the cook's. I left the special cooking instructions space blank. Marcy was in a hurry to see Patch at Delphic Beach. Too bad. I picked up my waiting order and carried the tray out of the kitchen. To my surprise, I saw Scott standing near the front doors, talking to the hostesses. He was dressed comfortably in loose-fitting Levi's and a snug t-shirt, and given the body language of the two black-clad hostesses, they were flirting with him. He caught my eye and gave a low wave of recognition. I dropped off Table 15's order, then hiked the stairs. Hey, I told Scott, pulling off the newsboy cap to fan my face.
V told me I'd find you here.
You called V?
Yeah, after you didn't return any of my messages.
I wiped my arm across my forehead, sweeping a few loose hairs back into place. My cell is in the back. I haven't had a chance to check it since I clocked in. What do you need?
What time are you off?
10. Why?
There's a party at Delphic Beach. I'm looking for some poor sucker to drag along.
Every time we hang out, something bad happens. The light didn't go on in his eyes. The fight at the Z, I reminded him. At the Devil's Handbag? Both times I had to scrounge a ride home.
Third time's a charm.
He smiled, and I realized for the first time that it was a very nice smile. Boyish, even. It softened his personality, making me wonder if there was another side to him, a side I hadn't seen yet. Chances were this was the same party Marcy was headed to, the same party Patch was supposed to be at, and the same beach I'd been at with him just a week and a half ago, when I'd spoken too early by declaring I was living the perfect life. I never could have guessed how fast it would tailspin. I did a quick inventory of my feelings, but I needed more than a handful of seconds to figure out how I was feeling. I wanted to see Patch. I would always want to. But that wasn't the question. I needed to determine if I was up to seeing him. Could I handle seeing him with Marcy, especially after everything he'd told me last night? I'll think about it, I told Scott, realizing I was taking too long to answer.
Need me to swing by at 10 and pick you up?
No. If I go, V can give me a ride. I pointed toward the kitchen doors. Listen, I need to get back to work.
Hope to see you,
he said, shooting me one final grin before departing. At closing, I found V idling in the parking lot. Thanks for the pickup, I told her, dropping into shotgun. My legs ached from all the standing, and my ears still rang with the conversation and loud laughter of a packed restaurant. Not to mention all the times the cooks and waitresses had shouted corrections at me. I'd carried out at least 2 wrong orders, and more than once I'd entered the kitchen through the wrong door. Both times I'd nearly knocked over a waitress up to her arms in plates. The good news was I had $30 in tips folded inside my pocket. After I'd paid off my ticket, all my tips would go toward the cabriolet. I longed for the day when I wouldn't have to rely on V to haul me around. But not quite as much as I longed for the day when I'd have forgotten Patch. V grinned. This ain't no free service. All these rides are actually IOUs that will come back to haunt you. I'm serious, V. You're the best friend in the whole world. The bestest. Aw, maybe we should commemorate this Hallmark moment and swing by Skippy's for ice cream. I could use some ice cream. Actually, I could really use some MSG. Nothing makes me happy quite like a boatload of freshly fried fast food smothered in good old-fashioned MSG. Rain check? I asked. I got invited to hang out at Delphic Beach tonight. You're more than welcome to come, I added quickly.
I wasn't at all sure I'd made the best decision when I'd made up my mind to go tonight. Why was I putting myself through the torture of seeing Patch again? I knew it was because I wanted him close, even if close wasn't close enough. A stronger, braver person would cut all ties and walk away. A stronger person wouldn't beat her fists against fate's door. Patch was out of my life for good. I knew I needed to accept it, but there was a big difference between knowing and doing. "Who all's going?" V asked. "Scott and a few other people from school." No need to mention Marcy and get an instant veto. I had a feeling I could use V's support tonight.
"Think I'll curl up with Rickson and watch a movie instead. I can ask if he's got any other friends he can hook you up with. We could do a double date thing. Eat popcorn, tell jokes, make out."
Pass. I didn't want someone else. I wanted Patch. By the time V rolled into Delphic Beach's parking lot, the sky was tar black. High-powered lights that reminded me of those on CHS's football field beamed down on the whitewashed wood structures housing the carousel, arcade, and mini-golf, causing a halo to hover over the spot. There was no electricity farther down the beach or in the surrounding fields, making it the one bright spot on the coast for miles. By this time of night, I didn't expect to find anyone buying hamburgers or playing air hockey, and I signaled for V to pull over near the path of railroad ties cutting down to the water. I swung out of the car and mouthed a goodbye. V waved in response, her cell pressed to her ear as she and Rickson worked out the details of where they'd meet up. The air still held the earlier heat of the sun and was filled with the sounds of everything from the distant music carrying down from Delphic Seaport Amusement Park high on the cliffs to surf drumming the sand. I parted the ridge of seagrass that ran parallel to the coast like a fence, jogged down the slope, and walked the thin ribbon of dry sand that was just out of reach of high tide. I passed small groups of people still playing in the water, jumping waves and hurling driftwood into the darkness of the ocean, even though the lifeguards were long gone. I kept my eyes out for Patch, Scott, Marcy, or anyone else I recognized. Up ahead, the orange flames of a bonfire winked and flitted in the darkness. I pulled out my cell and dialed Scott.
"Yo."
"I made it," I said. "Where are you?"
"Just south of the bonfire, you?"
"Just north of it."
"I'll find you."
2 minutes later, Scott plopped down in the sand beside me.
"You gonna hang out on the fringe all night?"
he asked me. His breath held the tang of alcohol. "I'm not a big fan of 90% of the people at this party." He nodded, understanding, and held out a steel thermos.
"I don't have germs, Scout's honor. Have as much as you like."
I leaned over just far enough to smell the contents of the thermos. Immediately I drew back, feeling fumes burn down the back of my throat.
"What is it?"
I choked. "Motor oil?"
"My secret recipe. If I told you, I'd have to kill you."
"No need. I'm pretty sure taking a drink would get the same result." Scott eased back, elbows in the sand. He'd changed into a Metallica t-shirt with the sleeves ripped off, khaki shorts, and flip-flops. I was wearing my work uniform, minus the newsboy cap, vest, and pin-tuck shirt. Luckily, I'd slipped a camisole on before heading out to work, but I had nothing to replace the tweed slacks.
"So tell me, Gray, what are you doing here? I gotta tell you, I thought you'd turn me down for next week's homework."
I leaned back in the sand beside him and slanted a look in his direction. "The jerk act is starting to get old. So I'm lame. So what?" He grinned.
"I like lame. Lame is going to help me pass my junior year. Particularly English."
Oh, boy. "If that was a question, the answer is no. I will not write your English papers."
"That's what you think. I haven't started working the Scott charm yet."
I snorted laughter, and his grin deepened. He said,
"What, don't believe me?"
"I don't believe you and the word charm belong in the same sentence."
"No girl can resist the charm. I'm telling you, they go wild for it. Here are the basics. I'm drunk 24/7, I can't hold a job, can't pass basic math, and I spend my days playing video games and passing out."
I flung my head back, feeling my shoulders shake as I laughed. I was beginning to think I liked the drunk version of Scott better than the sober one. Who would have figured Scott for self-deprecating?
"Quit drooling,"
Scott said, playfully tipping my chin up.
"It's going to go to my head."
I gave him a relaxed smile. "You drive a Mustang. That should give you 10 points at least."
"Awesome. 10 points. All I need is another 200 to get out of the red zone."
"Why don't you quit drinking?" I suggested.
"Quit? You kidding? My life sucks when I'm only half aware of it.
If I quit drinking and saw what it's really like, I'd probably jump off a bridge.
We were quiet a moment.
When I'm wasted, I can almost forget who I am,
he said, his smile fading slightly.
I know I'm still there, but only barely. It's a good place to be.
He tipped back the thermos, eyes on the dark sea straight ahead. Yeah, well, my life isn't so great either.
Your dad?
He guessed, wiping his upper lip with the back of his hand.
That wasn't your fault.
Which almost makes it worse.
How so?
If it were my fault, that would imply I messed up. I'd blame myself for a long time, but maybe eventually I could move on. Right now I'm stuck, facing down the same question. Why my dad?
Fair enough, Scott said.
A soft rain started to fall. Summer rain with big, warm drops splattering everywhere.
What the hell?
I heard Marcy demand from farther down the beach near the bonfire. I studied the outlines of bodies as people began shuffling to their feet. Patch wasn't among them.
My apartment, everyone!
Scott hollered out, jumping to his feet with a flourish. He staggered sideways, barely hanging on to his balance.
72 Deacon Road, apartment 32. Doors are unlocked. Plenty of beer in the fridge. Oh, and did I mention my mom's at Bunko all night?
A cheer went up, and everyone grabbed their shoes and other discarded clothing items and hiked up the sand toward the parking lot. Scott nudged my thigh with his flip-flop.
Need a ride? Come on, I'll even let you drive.
Thanks for the offer, but I think I'm done. Patch wasn't here. He was the sole reason I'd come, and suddenly the night felt not only like a letdown, but a waste as well. I should have been relieved at not having to see Patch and Marcy together, but I mostly felt disappointed, lonely, and full of regret. And exhausted. The only thing on my mind was crawling into bed and putting an end to this day as soon as possible.
Friends don't let friends drive drunk, Scott coaxed.
Are you trying to appeal to my conscience? He dangled the keys in front of me.
How can you turn down a once-in-a-lifetime chance to drive this Stang?
I got to my feet and brushed sand off the seat of my pants.
How about you sell me the Stang for $30? I can even pay cash.
He laughed, slinging his arm around my shoulders.
Drunk, but not that drunk, Gray.
Chapter 14. Once back inside Coldwater's city limits, I drove the Mustang across town and took Beach to Deacon. The rain continued to patter down in a somber drizzle. The road was narrow and winding, evergreen trees crowding right up to the edge of the pavement. Around the next bend, Scott pointed to a complex of Cape Cod-style apartments with tiny balconies and gray shingles. There was a rundown tennis court on the small lawn out front. The whole place looked like it could use a fresh coat of paint. I angled the Mustang into a parking space.
Thanks for the ride,
Scott said, draping his arm on the back of my seat. His eyes were glassy, his smile hitched up lazily on one side. Can you make it inside? I asked.
I don't want to go inside, he slurred. The carpet smells like dog urine and the bathroom ceiling has mold. I want to stay out here with you.
Because you're drunk. I have to get home. It's late and I still haven't called my mom today. She's going to freak out if I don't check in soon. I reached across him and pushed open the passenger door. As I did, he coiled a lock of my hair around his finger.
Pretty.
I unwound the curl. This isn't going to happen. You're drunk. He grinned.
Just a little.
You're not going to remember this tomorrow.
I thought we had a bonding moment back at the beach.
We did, and that's as far as our bond is going. I'm serious. I'm kicking you out. Go inside.
What about my car?
I'll take it home tonight, then bring it by tomorrow afternoon. Scott exhaled contentedly and relaxed deeper into his seat.
I want to go inside and chill solo with Jimi Hendrix. Would you tell everyone the party's over?
I rolled my eyes. You just invited 60 people over. I'm not going to go in and tell them it's called off. Scott bent sideways out the door and threw up.
Ugh.
I grabbed the back of his shirt, lugged him inside the car, and gave the Mustang enough gas to roll it forward 2 feet. Then I engaged the footbrake and swung out. I walked around to Scott's side and dragged him out of the car by his arms, being careful to avoid planting my foot in the contents of his emptied stomach. He flung his arm over my shoulder, and it was all I could do to keep from collapsing under his weight.
Which apartment? I asked.
32, top right.
The top floor, of course. Why should I expect to catch a break now? I dragged Scott up both flights of stairs, panting hard, and staggered through the open door of his apartment, which was alive with the chaos of bodies pulsing and grinding to rap turned up so loud I could feel pieces of my brain shaking loose.
Bedrooms at the back, Scott murmured in my ear.
I pushed him forward through the crowd, opened the door at the end of the hall, and dumped Scott on the bottom mattress of the bunk bed in the corner. There was a small desk in the adjacent corner, a collapsible cloth hamper, a guitar stand, and a few free weights. The walls were aged white and sparsely decorated with a movie poster for The Godfather Part 3 and a New England Patriots pennant.
My room,
Scott said, catching me taking in the surroundings. He patted the mattress beside him.
Make yourself comfortable.
Good night, Scott. I started to pull the door shut when he said,
Can you get me a drink? Water. I gotta wash this taste out of my mouth.
I was antsy to get out of the place, but couldn't help feeling an aggravating tug of sympathy for Scott. If I left now, he'd probably wake tomorrow in a pool of his own vomit. I might as well clean him up and get him some ibuprofen. The apartment's tiny U-shaped kitchen looked out on the living room-turned-dance floor, and after squeezing through the packed-in bodies blocking the kitchen's entrance, I opened and closed cabinets, hunting for a glass. I found a stack of white plastic cups above the sink, flipped on the tap, and held a cup under the faucet. As I was turning to carry the water back to Scott, my heart jumped. Patch stood several feet away, leaning against the cupboards opposite the refrigerator. He'd separated himself from the crowd, and his ball cap was pulled low, signaling he wasn't interested in soliciting conversation. His stance was impatient. He glanced at his watch. Seeing no way to avoid him aside from climbing over the counter directly into the living room, and feeling I owed him civility, plus weren't we both old enough to handle this maturely, I moistened my lips, which suddenly felt dry as sand, and walked over. Having fun? The hard lines of his face softened into a smile.
I can think of at least one thing I'd rather be doing.
If that was an innuendo, I was going to ignore it. I boosted myself onto the kitchen counter, legs dangling over the edge. Staying the whole night?
If I have to stay the whole night, shoot me now.
I spread my hands. No gun, sorry. His smile was bad boy perfection.
That's all that's stopping you?
Shooting you wouldn't kill you, I pointed out. One of the downsides of being immortal. He nodded, a fierce smile creeping out beneath the shadow of his ball cap.
But you would if you could.
I hesitated before answering. I don't hate you, Patch. Yet.
Hate's not strong enough, he guessed. Something deeper?
I smiled, but not enough to show teeth. We both seemed to sense that nothing good would come of this conversation, especially not here, and Patch rescued both of us by tipping his head toward the crowd behind us.
And you, staying long?
I hopped down off the counter. Nope. I'm delivering water to Scott, and mouthwash if I can find it. Then I'm out of here. He caught my elbow.
You'd shoot me, but you're on your way to nurse Scott's hangover.
Scott didn't break my heart. A couple of beats of silence fell between us, then Patch said in a low voice,
Let's go.
The way he looked at me told me exactly what he meant. He wanted me to run away with him, to defy the archangels, to ignore that they'd eventually find Patch. I couldn't think about what they'd do to him without feeling trapped in ice, cold with fear, and frozen by the sheer horror of it. Patch had never told me what hell would be like, but he knew, and the fact that he wasn't telling me painted a very vivid, very bleak picture. I kept my eyes nailed to the living room. I promised Scott a glass of water.
You're spending a lot of time with a guy I'd call dark, and given my standard, that's a hard-won title.
Takes a dark prince to know one?
Glad you've hung on to your sense of humor, but I'm serious. Be careful.
I nodded. I appreciate your concern, but I know what I'm doing. I sidestepped Patch and edged through the gyrating bodies in the living room. I had to get away. It was too much standing close to him, feeling that wall of ice so thick and impenetrable, knowing we both wanted something we couldn't have, even though what we wanted stood an arm's reach away. I'd made it about halfway through the crowd when someone snagged the strap of my cami from behind. I turned back, expecting to find Patch ready to give me more of his opinion, or maybe, more terrifying, throwing caution to the wind to kiss me. But it was Scott, grinning lazily down at me.
He brushed my hair off my face and leaned in, sealing my mouth with his. He tasted like mint mouthwash and freshly scrubbed teeth. I started to draw back, then realized, what did I care if Patch saw? I wasn't doing anything he hadn't already. I had just as much right to move on as he did. He was using Marcy to fill the void in his heart, and now it was my turn, with Scott. I slid my hands up Scott's chest and laced them behind his neck. He took the cue and pulled me in tighter, tracing his hands down the contour of my spine. So this was what it felt like to kiss someone else. While Patch was slow and practiced and took his time, Scott was playfully eager and a little sloppy. It was completely different and new, and not altogether bad. "My room," Scott whispered in my ear, lacing his fingers between mine and pulling me toward the hall. I flicked my gaze to where I'd last seen Patch. Our eyes met. His hand was stiff, cupped at the back of his neck, as if he'd been lost in deep thought and had frozen at the sight of me kissing Scott. "This is what it feels like," I thought at him. Only I didn't feel any better after thinking it. I felt sad and low and dissatisfied. I wasn't the kind of person who played games or relied on dirty tricks to console myself or boost my self-esteem. But there was still a certain raw pain burning inside me, and because of it, I let Scott guide me down the hall. Using his foot, Scott nudged open the bedroom door. He killed the lights, and soft shadows settled around us. I glanced at the small twin mattress on the bottom bunk, then at the window. The window was cracked. In a panic-induced moment, I actually imagined myself slipping through the crack and disappearing into the night. Probably a sign that what I was about to do was a huge mistake. Was I really going through with this just to make a point? Was this how I wanted to show Patch the magnitude of my anger and hurt? What did it say about me? Scott took me by the shoulders and kissed me harder. I mentally flipped through my options. I could tell Scott I was feeling sick. I could tell him I'd changed my mind. I could simply tell him no. Scott shucked off his shirt and tossed it aside. I began. I looked around once more for an escape, noting that the bedroom door must have opened because a shadow blotted out the light spilling in from the hall. The shadow stepped inside and closed the door, and I felt my jaw go slack. Patch tossed Scott's shirt at him, catching him in the face. "What the?" Scott demanded, yanking the shirt over his head and rolling it down to cover himself. "Flies down," Patch told him. Scott yanked on his zipper. "What are you doing? You can't come in here. I'm busy, and this is my room." "Are you insane?" I told Patch, blood rising in my cheeks. Patch sliced his eyes toward me. "You don't want to be here. Not with him." "You don't get to make that call." Scott brushed past me. "Let me take care of him." He made it another 2 feet before Patch shoved his fist into Scott's jaw with a sickening crunch. "What are you doing?" I yelled at Patch. "Did you break his jaw?" "Ugh," Scott moaned, clutching the lower half of his face. "I didn't break his jaw, but if he lays a hand on you, it will be the first of many things to break," Patch said. "Out!" I ordered Patch, thrusting a finger at the door. "I'm going to kill you," Scott growled at Patch, opening and closing his jaw, making sure it still worked. But instead of taking the cue to leave, Patch crossed to Scott in 3 steps. He flung him around to face the wall. Scott tried to get his bearings, but Patch slammed him against the wall again, disorienting him further. "Touch her," he said in Scott's ear, his voice low and threatening, "and it'll be the biggest regret of your life." Before leaving, Patch flicked his eyes once in my direction. "He's not worth it," he paused, "and neither am I." I opened my mouth, but I didn't have an argument. I wasn't here because I wanted to be. I was here to shove it in Patch's face. I knew it, and he knew it. Scott rolled around, slouching against the wall. "I could have taken him if I wasn't wasted," he said, massaging the lower half of his face. "Who the hell does he think he is? I don't even know him. You know him?" Scott obviously didn't recognize Patch from the Z, but there had been a lot of people there that night. I couldn't expect Scott to remember every face. "I'm sorry about that," I said, gesturing at the door Patch had just exited through. "Are you okay?" He smiled slowly. "Never been better," that said with a welt-like bruise blooming across his jaw. "He was out of control." "Best way to be," he drawled, using the back of his hand to wipe a ribbon of blood from the crack of his mouth. "I should go," I said. "I'll bring the Mustang back after school tomorrow." I wondered how I was supposed to walk out of here, past Patch, and maintain any level of self-dignity. I might as well stroll up to him and admit he was right. I'd only followed Scott back here to hurt him. Scott crooked his finger under my shirt, holding me in place.
Don't go, Nora. Not yet.
I unhooked his finger. Scott.
Tell me if I'm going too far,
he said, tugging his shirt up over his head for the second time. His pale skin glowed in the dark. He'd clearly been spending a lot of time in the weight room, and it showed in the lines of muscle branching down his arms. You're going too far, I said.
That didn't sound convincing.
He swept my hair off my neck and nuzzled his face in the curve. I'm not interested in you this way, I said, putting my hands between us. I was tired and a headache was buzzing between my ears. I was ashamed of myself and wanted to go home and sleep and sleep until I forgot this night.
How do you know? You've never tried me this way.
I flipped on the light switch, flooding the room with light. Scott threw a hand over his eyes and staggered back a step. I'm leaving, I began, then broke off as my eyes fixed on a patch of skin high on Scott's chest, halfway between his nipple and collarbone. The skin was warped and shiny. Somewhere deep in my brain, I made the connection that this must be the branding mark Scott had been given when he swore allegiance to the Nephilim Blood Society. But it felt like a hazy afterthought, dull in comparison to what had really arrested my attention. The brand was in the shape of a clenched fist. It was identical, down to the exact shape and size, to the raised stamp on the iron ring from the envelope. With a hand still flung over his eyes, Scott groaned and reached for the bedpost to steady himself. "What's that mark on your skin?" I asked, my mouth gone dry. Scott looked momentarily startled, then slid his hand down to cover the mark.
"Some friends and I were horsing around one night. It's nothing serious, it's only a scar."
He had the audacity to lie about it? You gave me the envelope. When he didn't answer, I added more fiercely, "The boardwalk, the bakery, the envelope with the iron ring?" The room felt eerily isolated, detached from the throbbing bass out in the living room. In an instant, I no longer felt safe trapped back here with Scott. Scott's eyes narrowed and he squinted at me through the light, which still seemed to hurt his eyes.
What are you talking about?
His tone was wary, hostile, muddled. You think this act is funny? I know you gave me the ring.
The ring?
The ring that made that mark on your chest. He shook his head once, hard, as if to shake off his stupor. Then his arm lashed out, shoving me up against the wall.
How do you know about the ring?
You're hurting me, I said with venom, but I was shivering with fear. I realized that Scott wasn't pretending. Unless he was a much better actor than I imagined, he genuinely didn't know about the envelope. But he did know about the ring.
What did he look like?
He fisted my camisole and shook me.
The guy who gave you the ring, what did he look like?
Get your hands off me, I ordered, pushing back. But Scott weighed a lot more than me, and his feet stayed planted, his body trapping me against the wall. I didn't see him, he had it delivered.
Does he know where I am? Does he know I'm in cold water?
He? I snapped back. Who is he? What's going on?
Why did he give you the ring?
I don't know. I don't know anything about him. Why don't you tell me? He shuddered hard against the raging panic that seemed to grip him.
What do you know?
I kept my eyes nailed to Scott's, but my throat was clenched so hard it hurt to breathe. The ring was in the envelope with a note that said the Black Hand killed my dad, and that the ring belonged to him. I licked my lips. Are you the Black Hand? Scott's expression still held deep distrust. His eyes darted back and forth, judging whether or not he believed me.
Forget we had this conversation if you know what's good for you.
I tried to yank my arm free, but he was still holding on.
Get out, he said, and stay away from me.
This time he let go, giving me a shove in the direction of the door. I stopped the door. I wiped my sweaty palms on my pants. Not until you tell me about the Black Hand. I thought Scott might throw an even more violent rage, but he merely nailed me with a look he might give a dog if he caught it squatting on his lawn. He scooped up his t-shirt and made like he was going to stretch it back over his frame. Then his mouth curled into a threatening smile. He threw the shirt on the bed. He loosened his belt, yanked down his zipper, and stepped out of his shorts, leaving him standing in nothing but fitted cotton boxers. He was going for the shock factor, clearly trying to intimidate me into leaving. He'd done a pretty good job of convincing me, but I wasn't going to let him get rid of me that easily. I said, "You have the Black Hand's ring branded on your skin. Don't expect me to believe you know nothing about it, including how it got there." He didn't answer. "The minute I walk out of here, I'm calling